Thank you for joining us at Cultivating Hearts. We're in the studio with, we have a new friend. Adriana is here with us.
Adriana! Say hi.
Hello.
And Janelle, Miss Chair, myself, Sandy, and we are continuing in Matthew, and we will be starting to discuss Matthew 26, and we're going to go 47 through 68.
Yeah, we're going to cover a lot of material, but it needs to be together, and it is communicated differently a little bit by Matthew and John, and so we'll kind of dance around that some at different points. But if you remember the last time we recorded, we were talking about Jesus in the garden praying, and we left Jesus and the disciples when Jesus is like, you know, get up, my betrayer is near. And while Jesus was still speaking, this is where our passage begins in Matthew 26, 47. So while Jesus was still speaking, Judas and one of the 12 arrived with a mob, and they had swords and clubs, and the chief priests and elders and the people were with him, and his betrayer had given them a sign, and he says, the one I kiss is the one that you will arrest. And so he went right up to Jesus, and he says, greetings, Rabbi, and he kissed him. Friend, Jesus said, why have you come? And they came up, and they took hold of Jesus, and they arrested him. And at that moment, one of those with Jesus reached out his hand and drew his sword. He struck the high priest's slave, and he cut his ear off. Jesus said, put the sword back in its place, because it's all who take up a sword will perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot call on my Father, and he'll provide me at once with more than 12 legions of angels? How then would the scriptures be fulfilled and say it must happen this way? And all that time, Jesus said to the crowds, have you come out with swords and clubs as if I was a criminal to capture me? Every day I sat with you, teaching in the temple. You didn't arrest me then. But all this has happened so that the prophecies in scripture would be fulfilled. And then all the disciples deserted him and ran away. Those who had arrested Jesus led him away, and they took him to Caiaphas the priest. He's the high priest, where the scribes and the elders had convened. And while Peter was following on a distance, the high priest's courtyard, he went and was sitting in the temple police to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking to find false testimony against Jesus so they could put him to death, but they could not find any, even though many false witnesses would come forward. Finally, two came forward and said, I can demolish God's sanctuary and rebuild it in 3 days. Well, the high priest stood up and said to him, don't you have an answer to these men who are testifying against you? But Jesus, he remained silent. The high priest said to him, by the living God, I place you under oath. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God. Jesus said, you have said it, but I tell you in the future, you will see that the Son of Man is seated on the right hand of the power that's coming in the clouds of heaven. The high priest at this tore his robes and he said, you've blasphemed. Why do we still need witnesses? Look what you've heard, this blasphemy. What is your decision? And they answered, he deserves death. And then they spit in his face and they beat him, and the others slapped him. And they said to him, prophesy, Messiah. Tell us who hit you. May God honor the telling of his word. I know when I was preparing for this, it's like I know this is heavy and we're stopping at a heavy point. But so you're going to have to come back to get to the outcome next time. Actually, it'll probably be a couple of times, because next time we'll record Peter's denial. But here we have Jesus has been in the garden and he's been praying, and he tells his disciples, you know, watch and pray lest you fall into temptation. And this whole section is the culmination of the preparation for him for the cross. I mean, it's like it's hit its climax. And I think one commentator, I think it was Cornerstone, he said that this is the Christological climax, is what they reference this as. It's the time and point in history where it all just hits. And from this point forward, you know, it's been the steps towards from the time he was born, but this is like the tipping point. And there's so many things that we can examine, but we'll do what we consistently do. Let's talk through. And for those of you that know John, the passage is in John 18. Go ahead and use John 18 if you're looking and studying this as well. But let's consider all the people that are listed or talked about in this particular narrative. So who all is involved?
Judas.
Yes.
The chief priests are involved in this.
The chief priests.
The elders.
The elders. Jesus.
Jesus. Well, I was going to say him, but he was so obvious.
Okay.
Usually we start out with him, too.
I know.
Always.
Let's get him in there. Who else?
Okay.
Who else? 12. The 12, the disciples. Mm-hmm. And it could be also the crowd of disciples, too. Mm-hmm. You know, what would
lots
eventually represent the 120. Who else?
We also have the chief priest's servant.
Right, exactly. And John tells us that's Malchus or Malchus. I don't know how it's pronounced. And we'll call him Malchus. And then we have, based on John, we know we have Annas and Caiaphas specifically are the ones that are named as the high priest, so we can give their names specifically. And there's also a group of Roman soldiers we're told from John, which I did not do that particular passage. And the Sanhedrin.
And it says the whole Sanhedrin in my
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty
big
interesting
word.
That whole. I wonder what that is in the original text to see. That's interesting. And then the mob.
Oh yeah.
We have the mob. Okay, so I wanted us to see that we have all of these guys here gathered in this little spot. And they've been in the garden, they've been praying. What did we learn last time about the disciples as Jesus was going off to pray? What did we learn about the disciples? Because we have to understand this is where they're at mentally, emotionally, physically, socially, spiritually.
They kept falling asleep.
Why?
They were tired.
Ooh, okay. And so they've just been woke up again. Do you think that their minds are, like, connected?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Mm-mm. Not at all. They're tired, they're distracted, they have a lot going on. And so their hearts are, like, not prepared for what's happening. I want us to keep that in mind because it's really easy for us to, once again, I'm going to say this, to judge Peter. And, you know, just we need to understand where he's coming from because we know that Peter does something because John's the one that tells us it's Peter who pulls the sword and cuts off Malchus's ear. And so, you know, Peter's quick to move. All right, so as we're looking at it, what do you learn about the people in this particular passage, this narrative? What do we learn about the people?
I was thinking it was really interesting that the false witnesses couldn't find any testimony against him because they kept making stuff up and bringing him fake charges against him. But the only one that actually caused any pause was when they actually quoted what he really said.
Mm-hmm. And did he break the law by saying it?
No.
Was he speaking truth?
Yes.
Right?
Always.
So what was considered a testimony against him as something that he's done that's broken the law and illegal, he didn't. So even the testimony that is given is...
It's the truth.
Still false.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, what else? What do you learn about the people?
It seems like everybody is just at a state of emotional charge where just, I mean, you see everybody making very emotional decisions between, like, just the panic of cutting off the servant's ear and even the fact that there's a mob.
Also the disciples fleeing.
Yes.
That was a human emotion, fleshly
right.
emotion.
Right.
Fear.
Right. Mm-hmm. Have you guys, on Beauty and the Beast, you know the scene where, I mean, to me, seeing this scene, I actually wept. I remember even the theater because it impacted me so much because in my mind I was visualizing this biblical scene. That's just how my mind works. And so I'm watching Beauty and the Beast, and it's one of those, like, massive ones that's like a three-story screen kind of thing. And so you feel like that mob is right there on you. And what did the people have in their hands? They grabbed anything that they could when they were going after what they saw as the beast. And they had weapons that were bizarre. They had pitchforks and, you know, farm tools and the torches and all of that as they were going after the beast. This scene is that scene. Mm. Literally, when I was going through and looking at the different commentators, they were like, you have to understand, they picked up with the way that it's worded in the original language, it would have been whatever they could find that mm-hmm. they could use.
What's convenient.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it was just people in this massive frenzy in the middle of the night in the dark having to use lanterns. And one commentator said that this area, if it was a full moon, they would not have had a need for lanterns because it's like, and I've been there, there is nothing that would hide you from the light of the sky if the moon was out in the stars. And so the fact that they had, says it's probably a cloudy or overcast is what they anticipate. Maybe because they're in the garden, but the trees are not that big, and so it wouldn't make it that dark, you know. Mm. And they're carrying all of this and coming up. And so I was just listing out things that I'm thinking from the line of the betrayer, because Jesus' last words last time was, "My betrayer is here. My betrayer is near." And so thinking through that, and so I thought, okay, I'm going to focus on the betrayer for the moment. A betrayer likes to gather mobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
They don't do anything alone. Have you ever noticed that it's like if somebody has something where they've got a beef, they don't handle it by themselves. They gather as many of the troops that they can get riled up.
Yep.
And getting them in a stinky heart and attitude and going out and spreading their little whatever to see how many people they can get mm-hmm. and increasing that frenzy of mental attack that, you know, a betrayer would do. And so I wrote down, betrayers are cruel, but also so are people because they're willing to join the betrayer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is that if somebody went out and was spreading the good news of somebody, I don't think we're as faithful to draw that out and bring it to where we want to pull people together and let's go celebrate.
Right.
But when it comes to attack, we just jump the bandwagon. We go stupid. I don't know. Yeah. Mm. Right? And so then people act in a group in ways they would never act alone.
Yeah. Right.
Even what you were saying with, like, the Beauty and the Beast analogy, you know, at first they're like, oh, well, the Beast doesn't exist. Obviously, we all know that to be true because Maurice is crazy. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he exists. Well, that means he must be bad. Everyone, he must be
right,
bad. Like,
right.
the transition between what they thought to be true and what they now know to be true, just they follow along with whatever the common line of thread or thought is.
Right.
And mob mentality.
Yeah, it's the same thing
it
here.
It is totally the mob mentality. It is, exactly. And so it's that group, whatever. This is the sad thing, because Jesus told us in Matthew 10 when he sent the disciples out in twos, and I think it's also in Mark 10, he said that they have come after your master, your teacher. They are going to come after you. So this should not surprise us. This should not be a surprise. Jesus told us. Mm-hmm. But people are always looking for ways to tear down the testimony of Christ. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to go after him in the dark of night and to tear down his testimony, they'll do the same for anyone that is truly Christ-centric,
yep.
truly doing Jesus. They will find ways to do their attack. And this... I don't know why it surprises me when it happens, but it does every time it happens. We just need to get to the point where we recognize Jesus says it's going to be, and so you just need to say, oh, okay, well, there's my reward in heaven, and celebrate it, because he also said, you know, mm-hmm. in the Beatitudes that when we're persecuted for his sake,
we will be blessed.
We will be rewarded in heaven, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. The crowds use weapons. They picked up weapons. Now, what was Jesus' confrontation with them?
That was interesting, because he said, I sat and preached and taught in front of you. Why now are you coming? Almost like they're thinking he's a murderer, a robber.
And treating him as such.
Yes.
When he's been nothing but gentle, kind, healing, feeding, protecting.
Faithful, yep,
yes.
Everything.
And so they are willing to gather their weapons. I wrote down that... nothing good at night when a mob mentality is happening happens.
And, you know, think of Missouri and all that mob mentality mm-hmm. there. Yeah, absolutely.
You it's don't worse. See a whole lot of mob situations where it's, you know, you do see some during the day, but right. there a lot of that stuff that goes out of hand that's nuts, it's at nighttime.
It's usually at night, mm-hmm. right. in the dark.
In yep. the dark, completely.
It's, and go it's ahead. Easy to disassociate guilt and blame when you're at night and in the dark because it's, you know, everyone is doing it. So it's not me, it's not my personal sin or my decision, right. it's I'm with the group is saying this, so clearly it must be right. Mm. You don't have that individualized guilt. Right.
That's that mob mentality yeah. again.
It is.
It's okay.
It is. Yeah. And that is the reason, you guys, that places like clubs and taverns and bars, have you ever noticed the lighting is never where you
it's
can
always
see.
Dark, you're right.
Yeah. It is always dark. And that is the reason. It's the cloak and to promote what would happen in the dark. And so that in of itself was a huge thing for me is, you know, we need to question the things that happen in the dark, you know, because of this passage. And I also put down that it's easy because of what Janelle just shared for violence to increase because of the anonymity in the dark. You know, because you can't be seen, it's easy for that which we would not do in the light for us to do. So I wonder if they went during the day, if the people would have been as bold. I don't know. I don't know the answer.
People
it's just a wonder, you know.
Well, I mean, like they picked up stones to stone him in the past mm-hmm. when he was in public, but
right.
it was never, level. Yeah, it was never this bold.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just one of those things you just kind of go, oh, that's interesting. So if you were to say, based on the narratives we just read, and you could take a principle that you would want to tell somebody from this, and it could be anything we just said, if you could give somebody a summation principle, what do you think it might be that you would say? Because there's plenty, there's tons that we could use, but what's on your heart?
Bring things to the light.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
I was just going to say, don't go to the darkness.
Yeah. My prayer this morning was, you know, God, you are the Father of light, so let your light shine in me that mm-hmm. those who are around me will see. Do you have anything that comes to your mind, Adriana?
Just when I was looking at it, it really, just to remember that just because everyone is doing something and just because
that's good.
Just because there's an emotional fervor about it doesn't mean that it's right. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it, in fact, means that you should be doubly careful.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's good.
That's for sure.
Very good. I wrote down, even though circumstances are terrible, that they can be used for God's purposes.
Yes.
And that's something we will connect to in the next few recordings. We're so glad that you've been listening to Cultivating Hearts. You need to come back because we're going to discuss this further next week. And we're just going to examine our own hearts as we look at this because we are a part of that mob if we are a person who is using our mouth to proclaim against Jesus. God bless.